You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Monday, July 18, 2022. Back in the USSR, the combined impact of Russia and China on global products markets, published by Robert Hours. As the world economy tries to dust itself off after COVID, increased demand for transportation fuels coupled with tight supplies has become a pain. The shortage escalated to crisis levels this spring and summer when, in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, sanctions eliminated Russian exports of crude oil and intermediate feedstocks to the US and severely reduced flows to Europe. While Russia has been able to find some alternate markets, its overall product exports are down significantly. Adding to these product supply reductions are policy decisions by Putin's allies in China to reduce their product exports to a trickle. Chinese exports had been an important part of regional supply in recent years, but authorities there have decided to decrease the number and size of export quotas issued, leaving many refineries in China operating at rates well below their capabilities. In today's RBN blog, we take a closer look at how developments in Russia and China have played a major role in the current global shortage of refined products. In recent blogs, we have discussed a number of factors that have led to the ongoing global tightness in refined product supply, U.S. refinery shutdowns, refinery closures elsewhere in the world, and IMO 2020 impacts. And as we said at the outset, developments in Russia and China, the U.S. and Europe's primary geopolitical opponents, are only adding to these pressures. Russia has long been a significant exporter of finished refined products, mostly diesel and intermediates, vacuum gas oil, naphtha, and resid fuel oil. While Europe has been the primary destination for most of the finished products and also an important consumer of intermediates, Russian VGO and resid had grown to be an important source of feedstock for a number of U.S. refineries as well. If you weren't aware of Europe's dependency on Russia for its energy needs prior to March of this year, you probably are now. We've previously discussed the impact of the loss of Russian natural gas. See, everything has changed. As far as crude oil goes, in 2018, Russia shipped around 1 million barrels per day directly to Europe, excluding the Commonwealth of Independent States, or CIS, which includes eight countries that, with Russia, used to be part of the USSR, via the Druzhba pipeline before flows were reduced in 2019 due to a contamination issue in 2020 and 2021 due to COVID. Russia expected Druzhba pipeline exports to again exceed 900,000 barrels per day this year, but actual exports will undoubtedly be much lower, likely in the neighborhood of an annual average of 400,000 to 600,000 barrels per day, due to the impact of sanctions as well as Western companies deciding to self-sanction. Russia used to export another 1.5 million barrels per day to 2 million barrels per day of crude oil via waterborne routes to Europe, again, excluding CIS countries, prior to the onset of the pandemic. These waterborne exports were easy to quickly reroute to other countries, mostly India and China, but rerouting the Druzhba flows was a bit more difficult. Nonetheless, Russia has found avenues to get essentially all of these barrels to ports and onto ships. This could change next year as new sanctions take effect that will ban European insurers from insuring companies that transport Russian cargoes, but it's likely that enough shipping companies will still find ways around these sanctions by seeking insurance somewhere else, given the expected financial incentives to do so. Taken together, it appears Russia will have no trouble finding buyers for its crude oil at the right price. Urals currently trades around $40 per barrel below dated Brent. In the long term, decreased access to Western technology and know-how could negatively impact Russian production, but these will take longer to have an impact. However, things on the refined products front have been a bit more difficult for Russia. Many of the country's refineries are located inland and designed to export products by pipeline to Europe. We should note here that in this blog we're defining products as anything that has been processed through a crude distillation unit, or CDU. It's important to keep in mind that less than half of Russia's product exports are actually finished products like diesel and gasoline. The rest are a mix of naphtha, VGO and fuel oil vacuum resid that is sent to refineries outside Russia for further upgrading. It can be more difficult to find buyers for intermediates than finished products, since many refineries may not be equipped to bring in heavier intermediates like VGO and, especially, fuel oil resid. Moreover, as we discussed in glory days, the value of high sulfur vacuum resid and fuel oil is low due to the impact of IMO 2020. The International Maritime Organization rule that requires the use of bunker fuel with much lower sulfur content. U.S. coking refineries were major importers of high sulfur vacuum resid and fuel oil prior to the imposition of sanctions, since the U.S. has the highest coking capacity in the world, and rerouting these fuel oils can be challenging. We discussed U.S. imports of these intermediate feedstocks and we're not going to take it in March, but Russia was exporting significant volumes of intermediates to European refiners as well. Meanwhile, as far as finished products go, Russia exports primarily diesel, and this largely explains the particular tightness in middle distillate markets since the invasion of Ukraine in February. Russian product exports initially fell by around 750,000 barrels per day, from 3.2 million barrels per day in February to 2.45 million barrels per day in March, as US and European buyers shunned Russian products after the invasion. But Russia has since found alternative buyers for many of these products, with China and India most frequently cited, both primarily buying intermediate feedstocks, while Latin America and other developing nations in Asia have taken much of the diesel that had previously gone to Europe. Statements made by Brazil's president, Jair Bolsonaro, on July 11 about an imminent deal to buy significant volumes of diesel from Russia supports this trend. As these trade flows have shifted, Russia has found ways to reroute products to and from export terminals. These developments have allowed Russian product exports to recover to above 2.6 million barrels per day, and although this recovery should continue in the short term, Russian product exports will likely still be down by about 150,000 barrels per day compared to where they otherwise would have been, 2.75 million barrels per day versus 2.9 million barrels per day. We believe this export rate of around 2.75 million barrels per day is a likely ceiling for Russian products over the next year as Russia will have difficulty rerouting products from certain refineries. Moreover, Russia remains dependent on the West for refining technical expertise, process licensing, and critical catalysts. The lack of access to Western resources will become increasingly important in the coming years and will negatively impact Russian refinery utilization in the long term. Note that we still expect Russian product exports to exceed 2020 and 2021 levels as shipments were depressed in those years due to a lack of demand and weak refining margins. Russian refined product exports likely would have exceeded 2018 and 2019 levels were it not for the effect of sanctions. Meanwhile, China was a growing products exporter prior to the onset of the pandemic, with a total of over 1.1 million barrels per day in 2019. However, in an effort to force older, smaller teapot refineries to close, the Communist Party of China, or CPC, has been reducing the product export quotas available to domestic refiners. Teapot refineries are typically smaller, less complex facilities, mostly located in the Shandong province of northeast China. However, as we said in I'm a Not-So-Little Teapot, some of these teapot refineries are actually fairly large, about 100,000 barrels per day, with considerable upgrading capacity. But they do all have one thing in common, namely that they are independently owned and operate with a relatively high degree of autonomy from the CPC. One major exception to this is the requirement for government-issued licenses to export products. With a sharp reduction in these licenses, Chinese product exports are expected to come in at just around 600,000 barrels per day this year, down 500,000 barrels per day, or 45%, from 2019. This decrease in exports comes despite the completion of several new large, complex refineries in China over the past few years. The largest of these new facilities are the 400,000 barrels per day Hengli Petrochemical and 800,000 barrels per day Zhejiang Petrochemical refineries, which were expected to allow Chinese exports to continue to grow from 2019 levels. But due to the closure of many teapot refineries and a lack of product export licensees, this has not been the case. To better understand the CPC's explanation for such a policy, especially in the face of record global refining margins, we turn to Action Plan for Carbon Dioxide Peaking Before 2030, a document released by the Central Committee of the Communist Party of China, or CCCPC, in October 2021. In this document, the CCCPC laid out, among other things, its plan to limit total domestic refining capacity to 20 million barrels per day by 2025. Current capacity stands at about 18.2 million barrels per day, and an additional 1 million barrels per day of Chinese capacity is expected to be completed between this year and the next. Most of this new capacity is expected to primarily service domestic demand, which is expected to grow to nearly 16 million barrels per day in 2023 from just 13.9 million barrels per day in 2019. The plan focuses on efficiency across all sectors of the energy industry, and it's likely that the CPC will push for further closures of teapot refineries and reductions in product exports despite this new capacity. The plan does, notably, include other portions that differ radically from most Western nations' approaches toward reducing carbon dioxide, or CO2 emissions. For example, it states that China will, quote, maintain a steady pace of construction of nuclear power stations and speed up the large-scale exploitation of unconventional oil and gas resources. The plan also takes into account China's energy resource conditions of being rich in coal but poor in oil and gas. Still, as China has a command economy essentially under the control of one person, President Xi Jinping, this strategy could quickly reverse if he decides to change direction. We'll close by noting that recent developments in another large Asian country, India, could soon add to product supply woes. Along with China, India has refused to follow Western nations in imposing sanctions against Russia and continues to purchase discounted Russian barrels. India also announced new excise taxes on all product exports from the country effective July 1, 2022. The new taxes are pretty hefty at the moment, about 32 cents per gal, $13.44 per barrel, for gasoline and jet fuel, and 70 cents per gal, $29.40 per barrel, for diesel. In fact, these taxes are above typical pre-COVID Indian refining margins, and what may be a refining bonanza in India could put further pressure on global refined product supplies, given that India now exports well over 1 million barrels per day of products. Back in the USSR was written by Paul McCartney and attributed to the songwriting team of Lennon M.C. Cartney. It appears as the first song on side one on the Beatles' ninth studio album, the double album The Beatles, also known as the White Album. The song parodies Chuck Berry's Back in the USA and also gives a nod to the Beach Boys' California Girls. The song was recorded as a three-piece since Ringo Starr had temporarily left the band due to tensions in the studio while recording the album. It was recorded at EMI Studios in London in August 1968. Personnel on the record were Paul McCartney on lead, backing vocals, piano, bass, drums, lead guitar, and percussion, John Lennon on backing vocals, rhythm guitar, six-string bass, drums, and percussion, and George Harrison on backing vocals, rhythm, lead guitar, bass, drums, and percussion. The Beatles was recorded between May and October 1968 at EMI Studios in London, with George Martin producing. Released in November 1968, it went to number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart and has been certified 24x platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America. The first approximately 5 million copies of the LP had the Beatles embossed on the front cover and had a serial number. Ringo Starr's personal copy of the record with serial number 0000001 sold for $790,000 at auction. No singles were released from the Beatles in the UK or the US. The Beatles were an English rock band formed in Liverpool in 1960. With John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, and Ringo Starr, the band came to be regarded as the most influential band in history, one that changed the culture of the Western world. They released 17 studio albums, 6 live albums, 54 compilation albums, 36 EPs, and 63 singles, and have sold over 600 million records worldwide. The Beatles starred in 4 motion pictures and won 1 Academy Award, 4 Brit Awards, 7 Grammy Awards, 15 Ivor Novello Awards, and 3 World Music Awards. They are members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a band and individually, as well as the UK Music Hall of Fame, the Vocal Group Hall of Fame, and the Grammy Hall of Fame, and have a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. They received MBEs from Queen Elizabeth II in 1965. The Beatles broke up in 1970. All members of the Beatles went on to have successful solo careers. John Lennon was shot dead in December 1980, and George Harrison died in November 2001. Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr continue to record and tour as solo artists.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.